Despite his immense wealth, Sir William Perkin seldom travelled abroad. He had visited friends and colleagues in Germany and France, and had once been to the United States. But he found the experience tiring, and quickly grew weary of sightseeing. 8 days to cross the Atlantic, with nothing to do but read and look at the waves. But in the autumn of 1906, at the age of 68, he resolved to give travelling another chance. On the 23rd of September, he boarded RMS Umbria bound for New York, taking with him his wife Alexandrine and 2 of his 4 daughters. He spent much of the journey writing in his cabin. He had a speech to give a few days after his arrival. As the Umbria pushed on, newspapers throughout North America excitedly carried the news of Perkin's imminent arrival. "Famous chemist visits here," announced the Santa Ana Evening Blade. "British invade City Hall," said the New York Globe. But the coverage was nothing compared to the excitement greeting his arrival. The New York Herald racked up a list of his achievements and proclaimed, "Coal tar wizard just arrived in country. Transmuted liquid dross to gold." Everyone wanted to meet him, including President Roosevelt. And Perkin told everyone who asked all about his great discovery. "I was in the laboratory of the German chemist Hoffmann," he told the Little Rock Gazette. "I was then 18. While working on an experiment, I failed and was about to throw a certain black residue away when I thought it might be interesting. The solution of it resulted in a strangely beautiful colour. You know the rest." King David Lane, Upper Shadwell, is a short street containing Bluegate School and an ugly office block. And practically nothing remains from the area in which William Perkin was born on the 12th of March, 1838. Shadwell, particularly the lower side by the docks, had some of the most wretched and crowded slums in the East End. Perkin's family employed servants and were one of the wealthiest in the area. At the beginning, he had no idea what he wanted to do with his life. But just before his 13th birthday, a friend showed him some elementary experiments with crystals that William regarded as quite marvellous. He joined 600 other boys at the City of London School, in a narrow street by Cheapside, not far from St. Paul's. On his arrival, Perkin was delighted to learn that it was one of the few schools in the country to offer lessons in chemistry, a subject believed to have little practical use, and certainly less than Latin or Greek. The course was taught in the lunch hour by a writing master called Thomas Hall, and Perkin persuaded his father to pay an extra 7 shillings each term for the privilege. Hall suggested that Perkin might like to conduct some of the safer experiments at home, and helped him to buy some glassware. Perkin's father again agreed to pay for his son's enthusiasms, though he made it clear he wished him to become an architect. "Chemistry is fascinating, but there is no money in it." A few years before, in 1837, the leading German scientist, Justus Liebig, had some damning news for the delegates to the British Association meeting in Liverpool. "England is not the land of science," he declared. "There is only widespread dilettantism. Your chemists are ashamed to be known by that name, because it has been assumed by the apothecaries, who are despised." In contrast, Liebig's teaching laboratory at the University of Gießen was the envy of all experimental chemists, and men travelled hundreds of miles to engage in what their own countries believed to be an unrewarding pursuit. There were chairs in chemistry at both Oxford and Cambridge, but the idea that the subject should be taught and learned in the laboratory was unheard of. Students were merely taught chemical history as part of a wider science course. At the time of Perkin's birth in 1838, there was no college anywhere in the country dedicated to the study of chemistry. Liebig was an inspirational speaker, and it was his British lecture tour in the early 1840s which convinced men of influence that London needed a specialist chemical school. Sir James Clerk, the Queen's physician, Michael Faraday, and the Prince Consort, for years a keen sponsor of scientific research, established a private subscription to finance the Royal College of Chemistry, raising some £5,000 and counting both Robert Peel and Mr. Gladstone among its contributors. The college opened laboratories just off Hanover Square in 1845 and moved a year later to a permanent site at the south side of Oxford Street. The building was soon full with 26 students, and its size dictated that lectures be held at the Museum of Practical Geology in Jermyn Street. It was here that Perkins teacher Thomas Hall first came to hear the young director of the college, August Wilhelm von Hoffmann. Hoffmann's appointment at the Royal College was widely favoured by Prince Albert, who believed that Hoffmann would make advances directly beneficial to agriculture. Thomas Hall suggested Perkins should enrol at the Royal College at 15, but there was severe opposition from Perkins' father. But Hall persuaded his father to meet Hoffmann. "He had several interviews with my father," Perkin noted, "and the end of it was that I went to study chemistry under Dr. Hoffmann." That was in 1853. Within 5 years, Perkin had made his fortune.